you tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Olubunmi Bakari. This is our All Things Local series, where we highlight the local history, culture, communities, and personages who have made an impact on Washington, D.C. and the world, for that matter. My guest today is Hermond Palmer. Hermond is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania's College of Arts and Sciences and the Wharton Graduate School of Business. He is a poet, author, actor, motivational speaker, songwriter, and spoken word artist who's performed at venues in and around New York, Philly, Washington, D.C. Hermond also published his first book of poetry entitled Echoes from the Quiet That I Keep in 2016, and a second book of poetry entitled Words to Feel the Light in You. And this was in 2017, correct?
Correct.
He will be publishing a third book of poetry entitled What the Ancestors Told Me and I Decided to Listen. I like that title.
Thank you.
And that's coming out in next year.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. And he's also a regular contributor to the Washington Informer. Hermond, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, what else? What don't you do?
I want to fulfill every dream I ever had. I think I'm here to make a difference. And so anytime I have an inspiration, an inclination, I act on it.
Mm. So I like to talk about your upbringing.
Okay.
Now, you aren't a native Washingtonian.
No, I'm not. I was born in Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in Harlem, and grew up the first 9-10 years of my life in the Bronx, New mm-hmm. York, and had a tragedy in the family. My father was killed on his job. He was a longshoreman. And so my mom realized back in the 60s, I can't raise 3 children under 10 by myself in New York. So she looked for a different scenario, and my aunt happened to live in Teaneck, New Jersey, and seemed like a nice place, and we moved out there. And so I went through elementary school, middle school, and high school in Teaneck, New Jersey.
Teaneck, the home of the Osley brothers.
Oh, and so many more people, yes. But I'm the oldest of 3.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and sister, twins, they're 5 years younger, Maurice and Larissa. And we were inspired that education is key. And so we acted on that. We were blessed to all go to college. I went on to get my graduate degree. And seeing the difference that made in my life, I want to make sure that anybody I come into contact has some type of inspiration to fulfill their dream, whether it's college, trade school, I don't care. But mm-hmm. you got to act on something.
So when we were speaking beforehand, you mentioned something that happened to you in the 4th grade that kind of changed the trajectory in which you were going in.
It's interesting in terms of the impact people can have on your life. Mm-hmm. And they may be aware of it, they may not be aware of it. But my 4th grade teacher, we had 3 different groups in reading. It was the below level group, the on level group, and the above level group. I was on the on level group, and I had demonstrated a proficiency in reading, and she said, okay, you go to the above level group. And I go there, and I'm excited. I'm like, wow, I'm with the smart kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm distinguishing myself. But it's also a little intimidating because mm-hmm. they're the smart kids. And so the first day I get to read, she says, okay, Hermond, you go ahead and read. And I'm a little timid. I kind of stumble over my words. And I had 2 lines. And she said, oh, my, you're not ready. Mm-hmm. You're not ready. And she made a big to-do about it in front of everybody in the class. And it was so embarrassing. She said, no, you go back to the on level. You're not ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing just crushed my spirit so badly.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of the year, I was just in my own little shell, my own little cocoon. And I withdrew from school. And it wasn't until middle school where I found out that you could actually win trophies and awards for being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was an athlete and I was very competitive, that's what brought me out of my shell.
Mm-hmm.
So that even to this day, as a 50-some-year-old man, whenever I write a book, whenever I do something positive, I think back to that moment and say, yeah, am I ready now? going to an Ivy League school, not once but twice. Am I ready now? Mm-hmm. Writing my first book, my second book, going on to honor societies. Am I ready now? I don't ever, I want her, I hope she's looking down on heaven saying, man, you're more than ready. I want to prove her wrong.
So how was that like moving forward after that, going to an Ivy League school?
I was intimidated by that too. I was blessed to have a wonderful, wonderful academic counselor in high school. My mom, I was the first in my family to go to college. Mm-hmm. So I had no point of reference. And so my mom asked my counselor, she said, you know, can he do it? Because we can't help him. We don't have any insight. That's the journey we haven't taken. And she said the most wonderful thing. She said, Mrs. Palmer, they're not in the habit of admitting people who can't do the work. So because she had that belief, my mom adopted that belief. And because I was a good athlete, I had a lot of offers for different schools. Mm-hmm. And my mom came home and said, you can go to any school you want to as long as it's the University of Pennsylvania. Because we
why
have,
that school?
Because it was Ivy League. It was close enough to home that she can get there in a day. And we had family in Philadelphia. And it was a city that she was familiar with and comfortable with. So all those factors figured into my going into the University of Pennsylvania. But what it taught me was how to interact with and inspire young people. Mm-hmm. So the fourth grade teacher showed me what not to do. Mm-hmm. The guidance counselor showed me what to do. Always come from a positive angle. And so I tell my kids, if you haven't done anything, don't say you can't. You can say you haven't done it yet, but don't say you can't. Take that out of your language, because the person who thinks they can and the person who thinks they can't, they're both right.
And then you went to the Wharton School of Business with the same school as DT.
Yeah. Hey. please. Yeah. Well, we're going to sidestep that.
Well, what made you want to go into business school?
It was a logical progression in my career. I was in sales, and I wanted to make the transition into marketing. I wanted to be the person setting the tone and developing the plans, not the person just executing. Wharton had appeal because I was familiar with the school. It had a strong reputation for business. And back in the day, Wharton was really known as for finance. I was marketing. But the cool thing was, even though it was a strong bent toward finance, all the top-notch marketing companies still recruited their marketing people there. So I figured, you know what? There's not going to be as much competition on the marketing side as there is on the finance side. So I'm going to stand out. And I'm still going to have access to all the top level organizations looking for marketing talent. So I went to Wharton.
And so nearly 20 years ago.
You're so kind. Thank you.
Sorry. But you came to Washington, D.C. So what brought you here?
It was an opportunity to advance in my career. I was going to be promoted to a higher level and a significant increase in salary. And I love Washington. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the opportunity. I played basketball. We had several tournaments down here. And it's a great city. It's a clean city. It's got a lot of folk here that look like me. It's still close enough to home that if I had to get up to Jersey or New York, I could get there. And it's wonderful. I mean, if you've been to Washington, D.C., you know what I'm talking about. And if you live here, you're celebrating the success of the city.
And so marketing and the arts.
Yes.
You know, so I mentioned all the things that you do. You're a spoken word artist. You're a poet. You're an author. You're a motivational speaker, a playwright. You've written screenplays.
Yes. Yes. All the above.
How does, like, they seem like two different worlds. So where did that come from?
I guess it comes from the fact that growing up, I was a child of the 60s. I loved TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved the show Julia. I loved Sanford and Son. I loved, you know, one of the shows that they don't show, and I wish they would, is my man. He was the dancer. He sang with Luther Vandross. And because we're on air now, I can't think of him. But he had a show. It only ran one season. Mm-hmm. I wish they would bring that back. But I loved our story, seeing our stories on air. I loved Motown. Singing our songs in our voices, telling our stories. And I became a really huge fan, Gregory Hines, a really huge fan of storytelling.
He had a TV show?
He had, yeah, exactly. It ran one year, it was on NBC, but it was great. He had a son, he had a brother, and their father, and it was just well done. But it was our story.
Was that in the 90s?
Yeah.
I kind of remember that show. I don't remember the name of it, but.
The Gregory Hines Show, I think. But
maybe.
It was awesome. But telling our stories, I love hearing our stories told, but I want to tell it with my bent, from my perspective. And from what I'm hearing from friends that hear the music or read the poetry, like, that's how I felt. That's how I feel. So having the opportunity, having the forum to do that, I want to also inspire people. Stop being just an audience person. Mm-hmm. I want you to be a creator. We all have gifts. God instills gifts in all of us. And we just got to figure out, step out of your shell and allow yourself to surprise yourself and discover what it is that you do. Could be dance, could be sculpting, could be painting, could be poetry. I don't care what it is. Try something until you find your passion and then live your passion.
And so in your writing, what is it that shapes your writing?
Experience, what I see mm-hmm. on a daily basis, mm-hmm. what I feel. Mm-hmm. Every day I take a moment before I go to bed and I decompress and I think about what touched me today. Mm-hmm. What mood am I in? And I allow myself to just listen to my life. Mm-hmm. And I start writing and I start playing with words. And before I know it, different stories start coming to light. And it's fun. It's a way to process and decompress. Mm-hmm. And it's cathartic. It's a way to see my life. So if you look at my work, my kids could tell my great-great-grandkids, this is what your great-great-grandfather was like. If mm-hmm. you just look at his words, see what themes he talked about, you'll get a feel for who he was as a person and what was important to him.
Now, and also, this is something that we discussed off air. You meant, we kind of talked about you belonging to a group called Nuff Said, based in Westchester, New York. So talk a little bit about that and how that influenced the work that you do.
Funny enough, that sprung out of working at a marketing company up in Westchester. It was General Foods. And I had some colleagues who were writers, and they had written several works and decided they were going to put on a play. These are African-American women. And in their day-to-day responsibilities as professionals, they were amazing. And so I wanted to support them. I went to the show and I was blown away. I'm like, how can these professional women be so talented in another area that relates to creativity, not business? Mm-hmm. And I was so inspired that the next week I invited them to lunch. And I said, look, let's start a book club. And they were like, man, we didn't want to read no books. I said, no, I want to write books. I want to, again, tell our stories. And they said, okay. And that's how Nuff Said was born. Mm. And we had done two books and we strung the works together and had a play that was really well received. And then life comes at you and people start getting married and you start having kids. And we haven't really done anything in over a decade, but I'm picking up the phone. I want to call them and say, now that I have enough material, let's reignite and let's see what we have in us to share with the world now.
Hmm. And so from writing, you're also an actor.
I
saw a piece that you, a play that you played, William Monroe Trotter.
Yes.
It was a local production.
Right.
It's on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out.
Yeah. I'm the tall dude looking like a milk dud, but yeah.
So, you know, where did the acting
That come came from? Out of a buddy of mine from undergrad, was invited to be William Trotter, and he lives in New York. And unfortunately, looking at the logistics, he didn't think he could do it. And he knew I lived down in this area. He said, you know, but I got my boy can do it. And so the writer said, okay. He tried me out. And fortunate, I didn't embarrass myself too much. And we had four shows in and around D.C. And it was very well received. But, yeah, I like to act up. And it's fun. It's being somebody else, mm-hmm. being outside of yourself and telling a story. It's liberating. Mm. And it's a way to, again, experiment, push the envelope to see where else you can thrive and do well.
Mm. And also, I hear the motivational speaker in you as we're talking now.
Oh, yeah.
Your movements and your cadence.
Thank you.
Motivational speaking, did that come along with your work as in marketing, or is that something that you just developed along the way?
I think it comes out of my work as a coach. I coach track and basketball, and really, these days.
Locally.
Locally. And now, in fact, after this, I'm going to Prince George's Sports and Learning.
Okay.
Because there's a big track meet there. But seeing the impact that coaches and good teachers had on my life, you know, you can inspire somebody to reach further than they ever imagined they could. And when you see the light go on and the difference in a person's personality, I've given some speeches and the organizers contacted me and said, man, I got to have you back because these kids are on fire now. And all I do is build a bridge. A lot of times when we go out and we talk to students and children, we say, hey, look, I was you. And we say that with every good intention and truthfully. But the problem is they cannot see it because all they see is the finished product. So I make it a point to tell them every mistake, all the missteps that I did, and still I made it to where I am in life. That's how I build the bridge from where they are to where I am so that I can do it credibly. And then I can do the work of now let's build your dream. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you permission to dream, and then I'm going to help you order your footsteps in a plan that will allow you to achieve your dream.
And so the youth that you work with, they're local youth?
Local youth.
PG?
PG, D.C., Maryland, Howard County, Anne Arundel County, all over. I've gone over and I've done a lot of work with Job Corps, mm-hmm. getting students right and prepared for employment, soft skills, and just allowing them to get out of their own way and helping
them.
Do you
see yourself in?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I see myself in a lot of them, and I tell them so. And I break it down as to why and how and what they can achieve. And so far, it's worked.
And so I want to give you an opportunity to read
some of
your work.
All right. I'm going to, because I did mention my family.
Before you read.
Yes.
So spoken word artist.
Okay.
So we talked about motivational speaking. We talked about you being a writer. We talked about you being an actor. We talked about your marketing career. Where did the spoken word, the poetry, come from?
That came from Nuff Said. Just giving myself permission to fail. Mm-hmm. One of the things that people do is they put too many limits on themselves. Mm-hmm. They go through life saying, you know, people say, why are you going to waste your time trying to sing? Man, you can't sing. You don't have a voice. Or who's going to read your poetry? Who's going to read your story? Who's going to? My aunt once said, my Aunt Beverly, she came from church one day and she said, the minister gave an awesome sermon. And the sermon was, the cemeteries and the graveyards are some of the richest areas in the world because they're full of dreams, mm-hmm. full of people who had dreams but didn't act on them because somebody, a family member, who actually meant well, mm-hmm. talked them out of mm-hmm. trying or pursuing that dream. He said, when I die, I want to be an empty husk. I want to be spent. I want there to be nothing left. Mm-hmm. So when you start talking about all that I'm doing, I'm just beginning to scratch my surface. There's mm-hmm. so much more I want to do. I want to paint. I want to sculpt. I want to choreograph.
Do you know how to sculpt?
Nope, but I give myself permission to try.
Can you build me a car?
Like? Hey, I can design it because I give myself permission to try.
I mean, I just feel your energy
Thank you.
It's so... motivating.
I think this world would be such a better place if people would just listen to their lives. If they would just sit down, be still, and say, you know what? What do I want? Mm-hmm. What do I? Give yourself permission to fail. And what happens is, yeah, you'll fail. But at some point, you're going to start having success. If you're a baseball player, if you make an out and you're at bat, if you make an out 7 out of 10 times, you're batting 300. That's a Hall of Fame career. You mm-hmm. failed 7 out of 10 times, and you're a Hall of Famer. That's pretty cool. If you stop at the first 5, you'll never get to the 3 where that'll make you a Hall of Famer.
I didn't get that baseball analogy, but that's
well, great. Put it this way. The journey of a 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Just take the first step.
Before, yeah.
Take the first step. Take that first step. Everybody's taking steps. Why not you?
Okay. So I want you to read a piece.
Okay.
So what are you going to read?
This is called The Sacred Bonds of Fathers and Sons. And I dedicate this to my father and my brother, who are both deceased. But my father he's from the South, and he did a lot of work He was a really good handyman. And whenever he worked on anything in the house, my brother was right there by his side.
Okay.
So, the circuit bonds of fathers and sons. A final twist of the screwdriver, his labor now done. The man gives his handiwork one final inspection. Like so many times before, the boy watches the man with wide-eyed devotion, drinking in his every detail, every movement, every nuance, as if it were air to breathe. The man turns to the boy and smiles his love at the beautiful sight kneeling beside him. Looking at the boy, the man recognizes the familiar features of his brothers and nephews etched in the tiny, bright face staring up at him. Moments like this forge ties which shape the present and future of generations to come. Such is the power that exists in the sacred bonds between fathers and sons.
What inspired you? Again, like you talked about, that was your father and your brother.
Absolutely. My mom used to say my father could fix anything on a car. All he needed was a hanger. So that's high praise. And coming up in the rural situation that they didn't get an opportunity to buy a lot of things. So when you had something, you had to make it work. If it broke, you had to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became really good at that. And my brother just had a natural curiosity. He was always there. And if it wasn't my father, if the TV repairman came, my brother was right there. If it was the plumber, he was right there. And so I wanted to memorialize that vision that's in my mind's eye. And this is what it comes out. And it celebrates a father's love and a son's devotion. So.
And we talked a little bit again about your father, where he was from.
He's from Clover, Virginia, mm-hmm. in Halifax County in Southern Virginia. And
which is the same place Henrietta Lacks
who
is from.
A distant relative. So, yes, that's where she's from. And they actually were, my father and his brothers were actually sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my uncles, my Uncle Bill, made the commute from Virginia up to New York and found work as a longshoreman. And it was steady relative to what they had as sharecroppers. And he sent word back. He said, hey, look, there's steady work up here. It's good. So my father was one of seven. All seven boys wound up working on Pier 2 in Brooklyn on the docks. And growing up, I could go to Brooklyn, Pier 2, right beneath the Brooklyn Bridge, and I could see 30 relatives there because they went with what they knew. And they worked well, part of the union, all that. And that's a direct result of that work ethic, that trying something new, that looking for a better way. They instilled that in us. And I wanted to be a longshoreman because that's what my family knew. But my mom said, no, sweetheart, you can't be a longshoreman. I'm like, why not? Because when we would go as little kids, we would see all our relatives and they would give us money.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 60s, I could come home with like $10 and change. And I'm mm-hmm. like, man, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no, because guess what? When it rains outside, where does your daddy work? I'm like, outside. Mm-hmm. And when it's snowing outside, where's your daddy working? I'm like, outside. Mm-hmm. And when it's hot in the summer, I said, outside. She said, and you didn't even go in the little ship
mm-hmm.
because down there, there's a whole lot of critters that aren't nice. You don't want to be there. We want you in an office where you have air conditioning in the summer, heat in the winter, water, and a bathroom.
Mm.
And so that kind of said, all right, well, I'm going to have to look at a different solution. And that's where marketing came into play.
And then also you talked about that your mother, you know, from New York, and then what she did.
She was awesome.
Life.
She, my father never finished high school. My mom finished high school, did not have the opportunity to go to college. She wanted to be either a policewoman or go into the service. My grandmother said, no, she put the kibosh on all of that. She said, you're going to do something else. So she wound up being a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a really, really good secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, she was very organized. She was very polished in terms of presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that the better image she had, the better performance she had, the better opportunity she had.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that really imprinted on my mind was every month she would spread the bills out on the dining room table and pay them. And I knew what that meant. That meant we're going to have light. We're going to have heat. We're going to stay in our home. Everything's getting paid. And it, for some reason, that was very intimidating to me to mm-hmm. know that you had that one power because my father was deceased. she was it for us. She was the one that provided for us. So to have that kind of responsibility, not your whole family was depending on the decisions you made, how you managed the money, that was significant. And so from that, I've developed my own bookkeeping for my personal bills, but also it instilled an appreciation for financial literacy, which is one of the classes that I teach the Job Corps students.
And so for this upcoming, the season that we're in right now.
Oh, yeah. Plan. You have to plan your work and then work your plan, because people don't realize the importance of being organized. If you're organized, so much stress goes away and it makes it so much easier to manage your money. And most importantly, manage your credit, because credit determines how much it costs to take a loan. How much that means. Are you going to be able to buy a house? How much will it cost you? The same with a car, to open a business. All that's credit driven. Then what happens if you apply for certain jobs? You can't get them if you have bad credit. So, folk, anybody listening,
yeah, I know
take care of your credit.
that happens.
But that's important. And then also planning for your retirement. You want to make sure that you're putting money away. And here's a quick tip. Whenever you get a raise, people are quick to say, I can't afford the 401k. All right. You want to put in at least the amount that the company matches, because that's free money. That's an instant return. And then going forward, every time you get a raise, if they give you 3%, take one of that 3% and put that in your 401k. You won't feel it. It's new money. And after 10 years, guess what? You just put 10% of your gross salary away and you didn't feel a thing. So that's a quick tip.
Financial planner, actor, author,
We got to get it in. I mean,
it's a whole list of things. Like,
we got to get it in. I'm telling you, life is meant to be lived to the fullest.
I just need you to stand in our library and just work at the desk.
Hey.
Like, you can financial planning.
It's easy. Just
where do you find the time to do all of these things?
What I found is if you're passionate about something, you'll make the time. The way I'm passionate, when I was growing up, I was passionate about basketball. I was passionate about baseball. I made time for that. Now, I get up early to write. I get up.
What's early?
Early for me. Like, today, I got up at 5 o'clock. But what's really fulfilling, I see it
in
myself.
What time do you go to sleep?
11, 12.
And you get, okay.
I make up for it on the weekend, and my wife hates that.
Okay.
But my son, he is a track athlete, and he's done with high school. He was a state champion in triple jump. He's done with college, but he's still on his grind for track. And this boy is up. There were times I would come home late from work one night. It might be 10 o'clock, and he wants to go lift at the health club. And he's like, Dad, we're going to lift. Now, he's got to get up at 5:45 to go to high school. But at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, he wants to go lift for 2 hours because he knows that's going to help him achieve his goal. When you see that kind of drive, my daughter, to see the work that she's put in, she's now in grad school, and to know the effort, she set a goal and she's committed all into that goal. It makes me feel that my wife and I have done something right.
You did.
Well,
you set the example of, and we have you here in D.C.
Hey.
But you set the example for them. Like, you, everything that you've said. You know, I could see why.
Thank you. I want to be a role model. I want to. Our mutual friend Lamont Carey. Lamont told a story. He said he had a gentleman in his neighborhood who carried a briefcase and went to work every morning, but never said hey to the kids. And Lamont said he would think about, wow, if that guy would have just said hi to me, my life might have taken a different path. That stuck with me, and I've always wanted to be a coach. But when you hear something like that, very real, Lamont's very successful, great brother, awesome artist, activist, but that could have started earlier for him. Think of the lives he could have touched if it happened earlier. I want to be that guy, but I want to be that guy that encourages all the kids to follow the right path, to do the right thing, to achieve their goals. That's what I want to be. And my personal brand. Everybody has a personal brand. I want my brand. When somebody says my name, I want them to say, yeah, I like that guy. Or, man, I wish I could work with. Or, man, I can't wait to see. I want that kind of affirmation associated with my name.
You are definitely
thank you.
On your way to being there. Or you are there already because
I'm trying.
work with your athletes that you're working with and all the other young people that you work with in the Job Corps and all the other things that you've done around the community and around the DMV area.
Muhammad Ali said, good work is the price of our being here. And I think that's a good way to live.
So I want you to do another piece.
Can I do a love piece?
That's what I want.
Okay.
That's what we need.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the one.
The one.
All right. Here we go. I want to be the one who whispers softly in your ear, telling you all the things I know you need to hear. I want to be the sparkle that glistens in your eye, wiping all your tears away anytime I see you cry. I want to be the one you reach for in the dark dead of night, the strength you cling to, the one who's there to let you know it's all right. And with each sunrise, I'd give God undying praise, for he blessed me with you to share the rest of our days. I want to be the one to rub your back where you say you're sore, give you all I have within me, then rise to give you more. I want to be the one to make your dreams come true, step inside a miracle and wrap it up for you. I want to be the one you call on when you've had a bad day, the man with just the right answers who knows exactly what to say. I'll swoop you up, take you out, ease the tension from your mind, caress your face, kiss your eyelids, all to help you unwind. I want to be your voice of reason when logic saves the day. Gather all the facts and figures to help you find your way. I want to be the one to share your life's melody, dance in perfect syncopation, create a shared destiny. I want to be the one to grab forever and never lose my grip. Take a ride through eternity and have you share the trip. I want to be the one whose heaven starts right here on earth. Fill your days with joy and laughter. Be your happy ever after. I want to be the one whose wedding features you as the bride. Live a fantasy with children, you there by my side. Girl, we're here. Let's start forever. Take my hand, I promise you. We'll be together. The one. Let me be the one.
I can't talk.
Thank you. I hope.
I'm at work, but where do you hang at? No, I'm just kidding. You got some friends? No, I'm just kidding.
Bunch of friends.
We're going to have to talk later.
Okay. All right.
But
thank you.
I'm crazy.
Okay. I like it.
You messed me up.
Hey.
I'm all discombobulated right now. Okay.
That means I done my job.
Yeah, let me be serious. Hold on.
Woosah.
Yeah, woosah. Okay. So we're getting to the end of our show. But I have this thing that I call Fast Five, where I ask my guests 5 questions.
Okay. All right.
You give me the first thing.
First thing.
Pops Boom. Into your head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We kind of already talked about this, but what motivates you?
My family.
Good. What book has influenced you the most?
Autobiography of Malcolm X.
Okay. What's your favorite DC restaurant?
I love Busboys and Poets.
Do you like mumbo sauce?
Yes.
You had to answer yes on that one.
Yes, please.
I don't even know why I'm asking this question because you do everything, but what profession other than the one you're in would you like to attempt? Like, what else would you like to go into? You did everything, but you kind of said this already.
I'd like to be an ambassador.
Okay.
I'd like to build relationships to create new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you can do that between countries, man, that's pretty powerful.
You can do it.
I hope so. I hope I'll get that opportunity.
You will. I mean, you're on that path. I'm still not right after that poem, but okay. Well, Hermond.
Yes.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. And you want to tell folks where they can get your books?
You know what? I'm trying to get them in distribution in the libraries. I'm trying to get them in distribution on Amazon. But as of now, I don't have anything. Hopefully you'll have me back. And mm-hmm. the next time I'll have a website and everything that you can promote and folk can get them.
And your next book that's coming up?
It's the next book.
The Ancestors.
One, What the Ancestors Told Me. And I decided to listen. Mm-hmm. That's going to be out in February. And
is that a book of poetry or
it's
is it
a book
fiction?
Of poetry. Okay. And in this book, I experiment with haikus. So it's individual haikus, and then I string them along to tell a longer piece. So it's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
This has been an episode of DCPL's All Things Local on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Please visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download the show wherever you listen to your podcasts by searching for Full Service Radio. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.